Welcome to the Education Marketing Leader Podcast with Chris Raposo. If you're looking to dive into the latest industry insights, draw inspiration from education success stories, or just want to sharpen your marketing skills, you're in the right place. Here, we bring you a diverse range of voices from experts and leaders in the field, offering you a unique blend of professional development and practical strategies. Whether you want to understand your audience better, stay updated with the latest tech trends in marketing, or expand your professional network, we've got you covered. So while you're driving on your morning commute or winding down after a busy day, let's explore the dynamic world of education marketing together.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Education Marketing Leader with Chris Raposo. Today, my guest is joining me from the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. He is the Marketing and Communications Manager at King Abdullah University of Science and Technology. His name is Tony Sheridan. Tony, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Chris. I'm delighted to be on here. And am I your first guest from Saudi Arabia?
You are my first guest from Saudi Arabia. Indeed, I'm super excited. I love my American speakers, but I also love my international ones. I had people from England here, from Ireland, and from Canada as well. But Saudi Arabia is the first. So,
And I think your audience is anyone that's watching and probably even listening would probably guess that I'm not Saudi. So I am also an Irish guest. I just work and live for the last 3.5 years in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia.
And we'll talk about that a little bit during the episode because it is a fascinating journey that I've discovered during our pre-interview. But let's talk about your career journey at large. You know, Tony, you told me during our pre-interview that you worked in woodworking for some time and then you shifted to marketing, eventually landed in higher education. So give us a walkthrough about this fantastic fascinating journey.
I particularly social media. When we look at marketing and communications, you'll find a lot of people in social media that came in very unusual routes. And that's because it gave that opening, right? Where there was people that were doing it in their free time, doing it in their volunteering that given in. So I hear strange stories, but I think mine's definitely quite strange that I went to university. I was working on a building site, doing construction work, mixing cement actually. And so I was the first generation. My family hadn't been to university, wasn't really thinking about it, got in through a scholarship program and picked woodwork education. So I guess I was going to be a high school teacher of subjects of woodwork. And I did that. I actually went to schools and taught 12-year-olds how to chop wood. But that was during my undergraduate. I graduated top of my class. The university liked me and they offered me to stay on. So I graduated in August 2009 from University of Limerick in Ireland, 4 years as a woodwork teacher. And then I went straight into working for the education department there. So I actually started working in lots of different things. I worked as a research assistant looking at the sustainable development and how it was being taught in schools and loads of things. But in the side of my what became, I guess my job was a tutor, a lecturer, and I was doing research for the university. On the side, I was big into social media. So what I think is a really interesting line is that when I started in University of Limerick as a student of woodwork in 2005, I had never heard of social media and no one in Ireland had either. Now, America, yous were a little bit more ahead of us. Yous had already got online. But in Ireland, this was just not a term. Now, by my second semester, my first year, we were all addicted. So I actually pitched in 2009 to a professor to do some research on social media. I won't say his name because he said to me at the time, that stuff, flash in the pan, not going to catch on. Well, in 2016, I became the first ever social media officer of the University of Limerick. How do you go from being a woodwork teacher, then a tutor of psychology and philosophy, as it happens, into that? Basically, in my private life, I was volunteering for some wonderful mental health charities in Ireland. And because a charity, you know, if you say, yeah, I'll run your Facebook or your Twitter or your Instagram or whatever, they're just happy to have someone that knows how to do it. How did I know how to do it? I was just doing it in my personal life. I was really native to social media. I loved it. I love going online and crafting good content. And so I was able to leverage my job, my knowledge of universities, my knowledge of education, and my external knowledge from my volunteering work of social media, and brought it together. And thankfully, University of Limerick took a chance on me, and I got that job. I did it for 5 years, and I did it quite well, I would say. University of Limerick, while I was running their social media, we won best Instagram in Ireland, best Snapchat in Ireland. We were reached out to by, I was one of the first universities on TikTok. We were reached out to by TikTok. I remember the day TikTok DM'd us on Twitter, actually, which is funny because TikTok itself didn't have DMs at the time. And they said, who's running your TikTok account? I ran to Twitter as well. I said, it's me, this guy called Tony Sheridan, and said, we want you to come speak at a conference with us. You have one of the most engaged TikTok accounts in the world of universities, not in the world in general, but of universities. So I was, that was my weird transition. It was going from loving it and doing it. And then I was really good at social media, but I joined a marketing and communications department. So there was a lot of learning on the job as to some wider marketing and communication strategies. So later, I think around 2020, I did a master's degree in marketing management. So finally, after working in the sector for years and winning awards, I said, okay, I better get some formal education. So I have a woodwork teaching undergraduate and a master's in marketing, also from the University of Limerick. So I spent 15 and a half years from undergraduate, master's, and as an employee in the University of Limerick in Ireland. And then boom, I went to Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, we'll touch on that in a little bit more, but that's really fascinating. And it just comes to show, right, at the beginning when you start out doing something, you don't have to necessarily be paid for it like you did with the charities. You can get some experience under your belt and work up your job acronym that way. But as you mentioned, you spoke at a conference for TikTok. And I know that when you told me that had something to do, you're co-chair for, remind me, what is the organization?
So I've been this year co-chair of two different conferences. So one is the Middle East Advancement Conference by CASE. It's a global organization. I'm the co-chair of their Middle East group. And we had our first conference in the Middle East in a few years because of the pandemic. We brought it back this year in Abu Dhabi with a good colleague of mine, Lee Sublett, who works for a university in Abu Dhabi. And then just 2 weeks ago, I was in Liverpool where I co-chaired Content Ed, which is one of the biggest in Europe in terms of content professionals in higher education. And I co-chaired that with Tracy Playle, who is the CEO. She runs multiple conferences, Utterly Content, Content Ed. She's well known around the world, but I was honored this year. She asked me to co-chair and co-host her conference with her in Liverpool. So I'm just back from that adventure and all those learnings in the UK, and there was US and global people there. It was great.
Yeah, and you as you just outlined it, you were very accomplished at your university in Ireland. What made you move, or how did you come about moving to Saudi Arabia of all places?
Yeah, I'll credit me getting that job with limited experience in Ireland to a woman called Sheena Doyle. I think she's the head of external communications in University of Limerick, Ireland now. But she took a chance on me way back when, said, this guy has got the raw goods to be good at this. And she mentored me. And like a very, very good manager would, at some point where I was achieving these great heights, she sat me down and she said, look, you know, I love having you on the team. I care about you as a person. And that's why I'm going to say this. You need to leave. And I was like, wow, have I done something wrong? You know, she said, no, you're too good. I can't offer you anything else. Universities in Ireland, mostly public sector, there's a ceiling. She said, look, you can wait 10, 15 years for me to retire, and then they might give you my job. So I said, okay. I thought about it. Higher education is my passion. So I started looking at universities around the world. As I said, I had a woodwork teaching degree. So I was in the middle of my master's because I'm thinking, what university is going to take a guy with a woodwork teaching degree? Okay, I've got a bag of awards, but I might need a qualification. These are universities, after all. Their bread and butter is qualifications. So I was halfway through my master's degree. I was speaking on an international panel. I had built a kind of an international profile speaking at events in the UK and Europe. And One day I opened my LinkedIn, summer of 2020, in the middle of the pandemic, and I just had a message from a recruiter from KAUST, as we call it, King Abdullah University of Science and Technology. And it said, digital campaign specialist. I didn't even click into it. I looked at it and I said to my sister, I was in her car at the time, and I said, I'm moving to Saudi Arabia. She said, what? I said, I'm going to click open this. The title sounds good. I know that university. So I'd already heard of this university from a few years earlier. It's not that well known, but actually when you start looking into it, and I could talk about it a bit more, it's such an impressive university. And I knew that it was the first mixed gender university in Saudi Arabia. It was a mixed campus. It was a very international model. So just because I knew the name and I saw the title, and I'd been, you know, told it's time to do something, and I was open to international, even though I'd lived in Ireland my whole life up until this point and been 15 and a half years at the one university. I just saw that in an instant. So I clicked into it. I was on a Zoom call an hour later, and I wish I could say I was in Saudi 2 months later, but because of the pandemic, it took a little while to get me there. But alhamdulillah, as they would say here, I got there eventually, April 2021. I had started working for the university remotely before that. And I've been here on the ground in Saudi for 3.5 years. Like, why make the move? These reasons: I wanted career growth. Yes, the salary was really good, and I knew that Saudi could offer that. But also the university itself, apart from just being the first mixed gender university in Saudi Arabia, which was cool, it was also number one in the world in terms of citations for faculty for 8 years in a row. It had the best supercomputer of any university in the world. Only university in the world with its name on a Formula One car. You'll see KAUST on the McLaren Formula One. And we don't spend any of our marketing budget to put it there. I mean, I'm the marketing and communications manager, so I know this. We're a technology partner because we've got great scientists, great labs, the best in the world. So I just, as a storyteller, said the stories in this ancient country that is a land of stories, like Ireland is, I was like, I'm going to give it a go. And was I scared? Absolutely. Is what Saudi Arabia like to Ireland? One of the biggest things, I actually think, because I was such a high achiever and I was really hitting the mark in my job, one of the things that made me really good in Ireland was that I went to that university. I knew it inside and out. You know, I started good at social media and knowing the university. And I had to trust that in that time, I had really built up that proper marketing and communication strategic knowledge. But I was just ready to say, you know what? I think I might actually be good at this in general. And instead of just moving to another university in Ireland and trying that, I just went across the world to Saudi Arabia. I tried it, and it turns out that I'm actually not too bad at it here in Saudi Arabia either.
Yeah, let's talk about adapting to cultural differences there. You know, coming from Ireland, going to Saudi Arabia, it sounds like a big cultural change. How did your background experience in Ireland shape the way you approach marketing at KAUST? And did you have to make major adjustments in your approach?
Massive adjustments, definitely. So the brand proposition, the tone of voice, and I ran all the socials. So I was the tone of voice. I set the tone of voice in Ireland. We were the youngest university in Ireland. We were, as the kids would call it today, brat, right? Like we were out there, maybe not Wendy's level, but there was clapbacks, there was sass, there was humor, lots and lots of humor. Now, coming to Saudi Arabia, where it's really in its infancy in terms of adopting social media, in terms of that idea of kind of out there or kind of cut through comms. So it was a whole new challenge. Also, the university in Ireland, very undergraduate focused, young. Here, we're postgraduate only, science and tech only. So we're at the boring end of the subjects with the boring end of the students, right? So I was like, this is an interesting challenge. But the research here was amazing. A lot of universities say they have amazing research or really like the research here is world changing in some cases. Like so the stories, everything. So new tone of voice, new approach. And I'd give advice if somebody's going to move their career, and maybe across the states, because I've been all across the United States. California is very different than New York, right? So you're going to see a culture shift if you move across the country there. So there was two sides of the coin for me. One, people are people. and you are you. So it wasn't as strange of an experience when I got there because I live inside my own head. I go to work for 8 a.m. I come home, ideally earlier than I normally do, but I come home and I watch Netflix. I watch the same shows on Netflix. So, and my thoughts are the same, and I'm me. So that bit, it wasn't that strange. And then people are people. My colleague Abdullah, instead of my colleague Paddy in Ireland, he talks to me about he's tired because his kid kept him up last night and one of his kids is sick and he's got school and the school run and his wife. And people are people. So Saudi people are a lot of the same drivers. And while I saw that in my colleagues, it also inspired me that that helps me in my content, in my marketing and communications, to remember that the fundamental drivers that get someone to watch a video or click on a link are the same in Saudi Arabia. Storytelling practices are going to work here. So not only did it help me in my personal life, but it helped me in my professional endeavors too. Now, the second part that I always say to people is, yes, there's a lot of similarities. People are people, but there are differences, and those differences can be very important. So I just put in systems that meant that there were checks and balances. So if I come up with a concept, if I come up even with an interview, if I interviewed someone and I made a cut down, I had, let's call them a cultural broker, someone that I, a Saudi guy who was, you know, you can't just expect any person in the country to know I had a trained marketing and communications professional that I could bounce it off and say, look, here's my cut down interview. Is there anything culturally insensitive, you know, a red flag that I'm not seeing with a cultural blind spot? And 3.5 years later, I'm definitely better at spotting those. They don't happen as much, but I still need to check because I wasn't born here. I didn't grow up here. And even in Ireland, maybe I'd miss something. So having that system where this piece of content gets reviewed by someone who can take that different perspective, that was part of what I built. And it definitely worked. There was times where I had a video and I was like, this is perfect. I can't see anything wrong with it. And then I'd be pulled and it would be something tiny, something minor. But having that support and having that built into a system, I think it's really important to have it structured out, because if you're asking someone to do something that you're going to repeat, that's work, right? I can't just bust into my colleague's office and say, hey, check my work. I needed to make it clear with management that this is a collective effort and that if I can come here and I can deliver X, Y, and Z, but I need A, B, and C to support that. And thankfully, the management here, the colleagues that I had here, were super open to change. And that's something that you know, the sort of stories we were telling here, it was pretty new for Saudi Arabia. So the country has undergone social change starting, let's say, from 2016 with a new crown prince who's been a real reformer, but really solidly since late 2018 into 2019 and every year since, there's been massive social change. And the university, while it's been open for 15 years, wasn't really showing or telling those stories visually until around the time that I was hired. So I brought in and said, okay, Saudi Arabia used to not let women's faces be seen in any advertising around the country. Now take this Saudi student and film her in the gym, on the beach, doing yoga, in her lab coat, doing science with no hijab on, put that on screen and put it out there. And that was really cool. We were telling stories that had literally never been told in that way before. Really, something that can give you passion and purpose. A little bit scary because you have to put in the processes and the policies and the safeguards, but it has gone really, really well. And I enjoy it every time.
And you recently spoke about this during a conference. You sent me some slides, the content marketing strategies that deliver graduation results and empower in the process. In it, there were several brand or campaign pillars, which included diversity, inclusion, strategic alignment. Now, the question is there, let's dive into those brand pillars a little bit, because you had to make a cultural change that you were able to show these women on screen. How were you able to convince leadership to buy into this without being afraid that they get offended?
Yeah, well, firstly, the visionary thoughts were not mine. So these were coming from the government, right? And the interesting thing about our university 15 years ago, first mixed gender university, really cutting edge. But the transformation had happened far beyond the walls of our university around the country for years. So we're at a place where if we don't start developing this type of content, we're going to be playing catch up with the rest of the country instead of leading as we should be. So yes, externally, we knew that we had government support, but internally, you're right. We did have those issues, those kind of stuck in the old ways of thinking with leadership. So, and it actually manifested in that I inherited a campaign, and it was interviews with faculty, 12 interviews with faculty, and there was 11 men and one woman. And I said, why do we only have one woman? And they said, oh, because we felt that we needed at least one, right? The initial list was 12 men. I thought, oh, you're so close, guys. You're so close to understanding that this was a problem. So that campaign went live. It went out. It was actually a relatively big campaign partnered with Times Higher Education. And the content individually was good. Really good, solid interviews and video content with our professors. However, when you saw it in its scope, you realize one woman, 11 men. It looked bad. And I'll never forget the tagline of it was, you know, professors at one of the world's leading STEM universities tackling global challenges. And a tweet, quote tweeted us and said, tackling global challenges except for diversity. And it was hilarious, but it hurt too, right? Because there was truth in it. Now, what makes it even sadder is that that's feeding into the worst preconceptions about Saudi Arabia. I was recently on holidays. I was doing a walking tour in Croatia and I met an American woman. And I said, I worked at a university in Saudi Arabia. And she goes, no, they don't have universities in Saudi Arabia. And I said, well, I better tell everybody because I work at one. And then her husband interjected and he goes, they do, honey. They just don't let women go to them.
Ooh.
Right. And so I love that he had this confidence in correcting her, but was also wrong. Right. So then I explained to them that not only are we the first mixed gender university, but women go to university in Saudi Arabia. There are female professors. We have female Saudi professors. We have female professors from all over the world. And 51% of university graduates in Saudi Arabia are women. So the perception is wrong. And our staff, our stats for a postgrad only, science and tech only, let's say a grad school, they'd call it in the US, we have 39% female graduates. When I look at my Saudis, because we're international and Saudi, it's 45% female. Now, if I go to a top US university, go to their grad school in science and engineering and tell me how many women are studying there, the last I saw, it's something like a global average of 13%. So here we are creating a campaign with 11 male professors and one woman that it's not even reflective of the reality, and it's feeding into the worst things. So out of this issue is where my concept of campaign pillars was born. So I said, I could talk for an hour about why that was wrong, but I've not got something simple and straightforward to tie it to. And the provost, who is a great guy, when I would get time with him, and the faculty campaigns were in partnership with him, Larry Kern, he's now at Duke University in the US. He spent 25 years there, came here, and is back there now. You know, I got a 15-minute meeting with him because he's so busy. He's engaged and he loved the campaigns, but I got 15 minutes with him. So I said, okay, how do I explain this quickly where I can say, you know, we can't do that again because of something, right? So I sat there and I said, fundamentally, what do I want my campaigns to be? I want them to be diverse, but I also want them to be representative, right? I had a guy say to me, could you edit out that video? I'm going to a conference in the US. And I said, what do you want me to edit about the video? He said, could you cut out all the girls with the hijabs on? And I said, well, no, we have Saudi women with no hijab on, Saudi women with a hijab. We have our student body. It's representative of our student body. They have the choice in Saudi Arabia to wear a hijab or not. Why would we cut that out? And he said, well, you know, some of the students we're trying to recruit, maybe they wouldn't like that. And I said, well, I said, maybe you shouldn't work here, but certainly any student that's worried about a lovely young girl wearing a hijab shouldn't come study in Saudi Arabia. But it goes to show that I said, not just human, not just diverse, inclusive and representative, right? So now I'm forming pillars. Then I said strategically aligned. Then I said, you know, it's going to be optimized. We're going to be ambitious. So for me, I said, we've got this big thing. I don't want little, I want big campaigns. I want to really make an impact. That was a personal thing. So I set out 12 and I workshopped it with the team. I brought it to my director and I said, is there any of these? And I think maybe I had 15 originally, and then we went down to 10 and then we added two more, but we settled. And it's a wonderful activity. It'll only take an hour for anyone in marketing and comms to say, you don't need 12, maybe you need six. And then in 3 months, you realize, no, you do need eight because there's some other things that come up. But I walked into that meeting and I said, he said, let's just pick these top ranked professors or whatever. And I said, well, does it happen that they're all men? And, you know, because women historically have been excluded from the academic profession. And while they're catching up, you know, there's a disparity there. So I said, yeah. And I said, okay, well, we're not going to do that. I said, I want a diverse representative of faculty. And so I want some junior faculty and some senior faculty. And this is going to make the campaign better. Now, I tied it to these pillars. The provost loved it. It wasn't that I was pushing back. I'm coming in with a plan. I'm a man with a plan. It makes sense. It's tied to something. And so I had this line before that people, some of the people on my team, they were worried, you know, about pushing back or change. They said, oh, but they mightn't like the change. I find reasonable people and good people are totally fine with change if what you're offering achieves their objectives better than what was before. So understanding what he wanted and coming in and saying, I'm making this easier for you. This is evidence-based. It's tied to something. So I've spoke about this at conferences all around the world. And it's so simple. All I'm saying is write down 12 things, but using them in practice. And somebody says, okay, we want to do X. And I'd say, cool, I get it. What are you trying to achieve? The classic, you know, what's your goals? I'd say, okay, well, if we did that, yeah, we'd tick this box and this box, but we'd miss out on these three boxes. So let's look at a way that we can achieve your goal and that it also aligns with our strategy pillars. And I've had that conversation, that exact kind of thing with 100+ people since. It's been so useful. And I've rarely had anyone like not get it really quickly. So that's the concept of strategy pillars.
That's a beautiful roadmap for anybody who's aspiring to be a change agent on their university and coming in with a problem, but also having to have the solution right then and there for the decision maker if you get those 15 minutes that you otherwise, you know, wouldn't get, or it would take a long time to get that. Now, there's a lot of talk when it comes to higher ed marketing about social proof. I always say social proof is the best proof. We always talk about user-generated content, but you brought up a concept of co-created content for inclusive marketing. So can you share a little bit about that, how you implement that, and how you use co-created content models to help you showcase diverse voices at KAUST, and what role students, alumni, and faculty play in shaping these stories?
Yeah. So going back to the strategy pillars, our first one was human, right? Mm-hmm. So because the university wasn't showing the diverse, inclusive environment, for cultural reasons, it started opening it up. And then the question was, well, do we just want to show all the old professors? Not this, they're cool. We got some great, cool old professors. I love interviewing them and I've done that. But we said, you know, who is the humans of KAUST that we want to show? So it was our students, our alumni, and our faculty. And then we broadened that out a little bit later for our researchers, because we're a very research intensive, research focused institution. So you know who your people are. Now, I've ran campaigns with each subset of those and sometimes cross sections of those that touched on different teams. Most of our campaigns are the campaigns that I was originally doing. You know, when you've got that marketing budget, you've got that high end Not even, we're not talking ultra high-end production. We're still a university. We don't have, our budgets are the same as US or less, probably, you know, in the marketing and communications thing. But, you know, they were still glossy, let's call produced campaigns. The problem with that, and the analogy, I spoke about this at Content Ed in the UK, and I brought it way, way back to my first ever job when I was 12 years old. My first ever job when I was 12 years old, I worked on a market stall, right? Yeah, a little market trader. And first day that I showed up at this, no training, anything, a little biscuit tin, a little cookie jar for with cash in it. And I'm supposed to sell clothes, right? There's just a load of clothes on a table. There's hundreds of market stalls. And it's with my mother's uncle, so my great uncle. And he comes and he teaches me a lesson that I still use to this day. And it's built into this co-created content strategy. He comes to me with five jackets, five coats. And he says, I've just bought these full price, so we're not going to make any money off them. I said, okay, so why do we buy them? I was 12, but I understood economies of scale. You buy 100, you get them cheaper. You make some profit selling them. He had just went to another stall and just bought them and brought them back. And he says, I want to see if they sell. And so we put them up, and within minutes, and these were, as far as I understood it, guys' jackets. So the first customer of the day comes along, and it's a woman. And before I even try and sell, it's down, it's on her. I wasn't going to try and sell her the jacket. So she's wearing it. She sees me. And I kind of, she gets the look in my eyes, and she must have got that I was a little surprised. And she goes, oh, are these jackets for women? And I said, well, that jacket's been designed that both men and women can wear it, because that's technically true. Even if it's a men's jacket, she can wear it. And I said, but you know, I thought I might sell more to men, but I haven't sold one to a man yet. Now, I also hadn't sold one to a woman yet. So I was learning sales, and that's why I don't trust salespeople, because I know at 12 years old, I would tell you anything to sell you that jacket. But what was my uncle doing? Well, my uncle, or my mother's uncle, granduncle, what he was doing was he was failing fast, right? And this is what, if you speak to this former CEO of Netflix, that's what they did. They test. And they need to test quickly, right? Because the data cycles on my campaigns, and even though I built a brilliant campaigns process that I had 8 steps, and the seventh and eighth step was looking at the data and reporting it, that cycle was months, right? We're talking multiple months, right? So you start, you plan out the concept. So how can I fail fast, or ideally win quickly, right? It's not, obviously you don't want to fail the whole time, but I think as content professionals, marketing professionals, you got that campaign idea, you hold it close to your chest, you build all the creative, you select an agency, or you work in-house, and you want to just show it all and somebody go, wow, it's amazing, and release it. That doesn't really match trying to optimize resources, right? So where does this idea of co-created content come in? So let's go back. We used to, when I won Best Snapchat in Ireland, we were doing UGC. Students were creating our content, but we're talking 2016, 2017, 2018, 2019. As I was leaving 2021, I'd noticed that the number of students willing to just produce UGC was declining. New generation, a little bit more conscious of putting themselves out there. But did that mean there was no students that were willing to feature or be the stars of our content? Not at all. And that was a university of 20,000 students. So you only need 1% to create content. So that's where I started mapping out this idea of co-created content. And I think a lot of universities are doing this. They might not just have that term that I've coined, but it's co-created content, CCC, instead of UGC. But because you're involved in that process, that's a set of templates, that's a list of questions, that's a list of guidelines. I produced one set of like how to record yourself in your bedroom at home, what sort of stuff to talk about your work experience. Create one set of guidelines, give it to a suite of students. They record themselves. You know, we all seen these day in the life videos. A day in the life video is a piece of co-created content, and it can be some of the most powerful content that you can do. Now, that was very challenging to get that over the line at Coast. What I'll say, it wasn't easy, because the idea of somebody filming something on their phone and then matching this to a university that's at the top of the world in a lot of stuff at science and technology, the idea that visually we would represent ourselves with a shaky phone, That was challenging. Let's go back to the 12 pillars. One of them, authenticity. So here we could go, and we're looking for engagement. So you pull in the data, you say, look, here's some top brands who are doing this. Here's if it's good enough for X university or if it's good enough for X brand, you know, we can do it too. So when I talk about co-created content, I just built out to explain it and get it over the line, a little six-step map, which was, if I can remember them now, six O's. So how do we recruit the people that are going to be the stars? How do we resource them? So what are we going to give them to help them do their part of the creation of the content? Three, regulate. So what are the regulations? What forms do we need to sign? What approvals do we need if they're minors? You know, if we have high school kids coming in to do something and we want to, like, what's the regulations? What's the data storage? In Europe, this was a big thing with GDPR. So how are you going to recruit? How are you going to resource so they can do it? How are you going to regulate and make sure that you're compliant that way? My next one is reward. What's a reward? Reward's a college hoodie. It's a, you know, something from your merch store. It's a thank you pizza party. So you know, nice. And to the student or the alum or to whoever, very nice. They're delighted. But reward can be done in lots of different ways. It can be a certificate at the end of a semester. It can be something to acknowledge the effort. But it's definitely, and let's be frank, what is this? Not just a way to fail fast, but it's also, it's a cost-saving measure, right? This is cheaper content. It can be better content and more effective content, but it's cheaper. So we reward them and incentivize them. And then reach, I put that in there because part of one of my pillars of the campaigns is consideration, right? So if I work with you, if I ask you to record something, if I tell you, you know, you're going to be involved in a campaign, we're going to use that content. We're going to try and get it out there. So it's considerate of you. And reach, how do we do reach? Well, we coordinate the release of that. Let's say that student's in a faculty or school in your university. Talk to the social person that runs the social media for that school. Don't have them just come across that piece of content the day it goes out. Have them know 1 week in advance that it's coming out. Yeah, they can retweet it for you, but maybe they can prep a quote tweet. Maybe they have a newsletter just for that school. So like, what are the avenues to make your content go further that makes sense? So that's reach. And then of course, you report, you revise, and you repeat. And if you're doing that in a reflective, you know, growth mindset where you're viewed at learning, you can fail really quickly. Because if you create a piece of content that you think is a good idea, and you know what your baseline average in terms of engagement is, and you know, you account for other variables like, okay, that day was a national holiday or whatever, you know, you can put it out and go, wow, that really, you know, what I thought was killer content. And this does not have to be a replace for your high gloss campaigns. This can be your knowledge base. This can be the thing that says, oh, that one that I did, that piece of co-created content that costs us next to nothing, that got great engagement. Why don't we feed that into the next time that we're hiring videographers or utilizing our internal resources, if you're lucky enough to have them? So what my granduncle knew 25 years ago in a market stall in the north of Ireland, that you got to fail fast to learn quickly so that you can determine your next actions. So he didn't want to get stuck with 100 coats that he couldn't sell. We don't want to get stuck with 100 pieces of content that aren't going to go anywhere. So that's my co-created content model. Great for your brand advocacy program, whether it's in infancy or not. It just gives it some structure. So if you want to go, say, instead of saying day in the life, you know, and trying to show a TikTok to your director or, you know, some senior vice president, you say co-created content, here's the structure, and it makes a lot of sense.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, was your co-created content process model workshop by our friend Tony Sheridan. Thank you very much, sir. It was really insightful. Now, let's talk future and impact for a minute before we land this plane. You really opened my eyes and you opened the eyes to the couple that you met in Croatia. There are 45% of females graduating in Saudi, which is not the narrative that we're fed in the United States about Saudi Arabia. Now, looking ahead, how do you plan to further evolve KAU's marketing efforts and what new challenges and opportunities do you see to keep that inclusivity going and keep it at the heart of your strategy?
Yeah, so I think considering that our goal is to be representative, right? And the university is reaching its goals of gender inclusivity, that by telling the human stories of the university, we are gender inclusive, representative, and we're continuing. The reality is that that's not going to be cutting edge or isn't cutting edge in Saudi anymore because the world around us in Saudi Arabia has changed so much, and that's great. Right. So when we tell a story of a kick-ass female Saudi who is, just graduated with her PhD and going on to do something amazing, that's still a great story. Right. So that's a great story any day of the week. So we're going to keep telling those stories. What's the challenge for us? I think the challenge for us now is that the university is shifting. We have a new president, we have a new strategy. So our new president, he's just come in from King's College London, former of Monash. He's got new ideas. He's a real heavyweight in the industry. And what we're really focusing on now, and we've been shifting our communications for this, is we've done a lot of blue sky research. We've done a lot of educating students. Now it's a lot about technology readiness and transfer of that technology into economic impact and social impact. So the stories we're telling, the systems still work. The models still work of telling stories. We just have clearer guidance from the university strategy as to what the brand position is, what our proposition is, that we're of economic and social impact for Saudi Arabia and the world. And so we're shifting that story from the fundamental research into the commercialization, IP licensing, and like basically answering the question. It's like, okay, so you do cool research. We get it. You got good labs. But what does that mean for me? Right? So we're not just when we talk about ourselves, and a lot of universities fall into this pitfall, it's like you're talking about yourself, and yes, it's impressive, but why don't you talk about what you do in the lens of your audience? Right. So we're working on X, but personalize it, get the human level. Like we have biosensor technology being worked on for cancer detection, right? That's very evident. People are going to make the connection really quickly when we start talking about that. But some other things need to be a bit more creative. Like if we're working on this new conductor, or if we're working on a new photovoltaic solar cell, right? So just bringing it to the level of our audiences to tell them what this incredible research university is doing to have an impact on their lives. That's the narrative. But the structures and the systems, storytelling still works, right? So that's how a guy with a woodwork teaching degree can become a social media officer and move from Ireland to Saudi Arabia and still be successful. Been able to win 12 international awards while here in the last 3 years at Saudi Arabia. Not just down to me. There's a great team of people, Saudis and international, behind that. But the reason I've been able to spearhead that is because my grandmother was a good storyteller, and so was my dad, and I learned from them growing up. So I'm bringing those base principles that sometimes I think people forget. I often see great people put out content or a campaign, and I say, would that make you click? Would that make you watch it? I think like we've got great professionals that perhaps it's a case of, the tail wagging the dog in terms of management leading marketing or something. But sometimes I think, let's say it this way. Think about when they launched the iPhone. Or was it the iPod, the music one, right? Set 1,000 songs in your pocket, right? Because they focused on the benefit, not the features, right? The features were somewhere else. The main marketing message was the benefits, not the features. So what's the benefit of postgraduate studies if we hone in on that thing that we do? The benefit. It's the same when I say, what's the benefit to the person of our research? Not the features of our research, like, yes, we have the highest cited professor in that area, we have the best lab. What's the benefit of that? What's the impact? So postgraduate studies, that's why we're focusing a lot and we're growing our kind of storytelling with alumni, because graduate destinations is generally the reason that you do a postgraduate degree, right? So looking at that and saying, that's the benefit. The benefit is the wonderful impact you can have in the world, not the semesters are X number of weeks long. So features, great for a website, great for a brochure, great for getting more info, but the benefits are what you need to focus on.
Tony, super insightful episode. Really appreciate you being a part of it. I'm so glad that I found your quote in Brian Piper's new book, Epic Content Marketing. There's a sticker, that's not the book.
I got the book. We got to give Brian a shout out. Yeah.
We have to give Brian a shout out. I try to give it out. There you go. You have it right there.
I have it.
Wonderful. So wonderful. I want to take a picture of that. This is fantastic. We're going to spotlight him a little bit more. Have you read it yet?
Brilliant.
And have you read it yet?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think he's got, you're in there. I'm in there. He's got kind of the who's who's and a lot of the top cheese in higher ed. So I'm delighted to be included in it. And it's just packed full of wisdom. It's incredible. It's like, I would say, you know, the best coffee conversation you could have at a conference where your brain is just exploding with ideas. And it's like, these are my people. These are the people that get it. And it's well worth picking up. So thanks, Brian, for putting in the effort of delivering a book, which in today's world, that's hard with all the things he does.
He is very active. But Tony, how can people get in touch with you or connect with you if they want to learn more about you and follow your journey?
Yeah, absolutely. So just reach out to me on LinkedIn. I love to connect. I share my work at KAUST, King Abdullah University. I share my conference work and all of that. You can find me. My handle is at the Irishman TS for Tony Sheridan. So I've really leaned into that, being the Irishman in Saudi Arabia. So the Irishman TS, that's my social handle across socials, but LinkedIn's the one that I really use, and happy to connect with people and delighted to have connected with you on LinkedIn and be able to come on your show and tell my story.
It has been my pleasure, and I know a lot of people get a lot out of it. So thank you, Tony. You take care, my friend.
You too.
Hey, thanks so much for tuning into the show today. If you enjoyed it, don't keep it to yourself. Share with your friends in your network. And if you have a moment, I would really appreciate a review of the podcast. That'll help other people find the show as well. Tune in every Thursday morning at 8 a.m. when I release another episode. Take care now. Have a good one, friends.